Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It is March 15th. St. Patrick's Day is this weekend. The sun is shining. The winds have been whipping. March has been doing the come in like a lion, act like a lamb, trick you with a lion again. And I think it's a lamb day. So thanks for being here, guys.
It's a nice sunny day.
Greg Hughes has graced us with his presence.
Hi.
Mara Carabello, also here today. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be here.
I feel like this is the first week where I felt like there was not a lull in political news because there was still a lot of political news, but I felt like there wasn't the fire
deluge.
Hose. Yeah, where I wasn't like, trying to get it all in. So
yeah, it was just normal crazy.
Yeah.
Just normal crazy. Some national news.
Yeah.
Court cases for President Trump, things like that.
Yeah, we're going to go over that. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening. We have a November ballot issue. We have the final GOP caucus results in. That took a long time to get. No Labels has announced they're moving forward, the TikTok ban, and there was a Supreme Court ruling, as you were mentioning today, that you can block people if you're an elected leader, but only under special circumstances. So anyhow.
Yeah. Lots to go over. I think one of the things you just mentioned, the final caucus results, I saw that in a press release that said for immediate release. And I thought, do they know what the word immediate means? This has not been very immediate.
I know that final 12% was lingering forever.
For quite
so
some
let's
time.
Talk about those final GOP caucus results right now then. Donald Trump ended up with 48,350 votes, and that was 56.35%. Nikki Haley, just over 36,000, coming in close to 43%. She actually performed quite well here in Utah comparatively against a president who you think would probably have a real solid chokehold. It makes me think back to 2016 when Evan McMullen was in the race. And my question is, because she had such a large chunk of primary voters, Mara, I'll let you go first on this one. I know Greg's disappointed.
I don't want her to respond to what I say, so let her go first.
Do you think these votes will go to a third party, whether it's RFK Jr., a third party, or will they coalesce in the end and vote for former President Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, I think to start with the bigger picture, I don't think they're going to go to Biden, right? Like, so I don't think you switch. So it is an interesting question. Utah has voted third party. Some of it is going to be the fun and also death march that we're about to start, which is parsing numbers. So I think if Utah, at the very end of the day, thinks that it would matter to tipping over the Republican victory, they will stay in Trump's camp. If it looks like it doesn't matter where Utah goes, I think if you were just asking what the electorate itself would do, I think if it's a Manchin, No Labels, that's probably where Utah would head. I think Utah's going to have a more complicated relationship with Kennedy, and I think they'll, to be succinct, I think they'll end up at Trump. But I think Utah, I think the Utah unaffiliated and lightweight Republican affiliate will want to look at a third party. I think it's appealing to us. I think we want more choices. I think that neither of the presidents in a very real way don't reflect most Utahns. And I think, though, as we get closer and closer and closer, and the us and them becomes more and more prevalent, because right now we're setting up a race that I'm good, you're bad, which you respond to me back, no, I'm good, you're bad. There's not much in the middle. There's not much nuance.
Yeah.
There is, you will destroy America. Oh, right. No, you will destroy America.
And we're telling the truth.
I think that, at the very end of the day, they will align with who they think will destroy America the least likely, and I think so the Republicans will line up behind Trump.
Which is really a great way to say God bless
it's beautiful.
America.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful state of it being is. Right now.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to happen? Mara thinks it's a bridge too far for some of these Republicans to go for RFK, who was a Democrat.
Before
a few
I look forward,
ago.
Let me just mention, glass half look full back. For the Nikki Haley campaign. She was still in the race at that time. It is the most narrow victory for President Trump of the four. There were 15 states that were that had their Super Tuesday. One went for Nikki Haley. Vermont?
Yeah.
Of the 14 that President Trump won, the one with the most narrow margin of victory is the one we're staring at right here with these official numbers, the 56% to 48%. So hats off to the Nikki Haley campaign for having a very strong showing here. I would even argue it was Herculean in that it had the lieutenant governor, very, very prominent, very vocal about her support for Nikki Haley. It had the first lady of our state, Abby Cox, Governor Cox's wife, first lady of Utah, very strong supporter of Nikki Haley. There was Ali Isom, former candidate, running for U.S. Senate, fielding or running the campaign for Nikki Haley. So I think that I understand why she showed so well here in the state of Utah. But I would say glass half empty, all that said, and not near that kind of effort on the Trump side of getting people out or having that kind of an organized campaign. President Trump still got, what, the 56%.
Yeah.
And so with all of that effort, I think looking at that, I would have imagined that the Haley campaign thought they might shock the country, that she could potentially win Utah because there was a lot of effort put there. And if it did, it would propel her to the other coming primaries. It didn't happen for her. Trump won the state and then she dropped out the next day.
Suspended.
So I think suspended. That's right. So
the technical term.
So, you know, that's the pro and con of that going forward. I think it's easily just like in 16. Look, Trump didn't win the preferential vote in 2016. Ted Cruz won it. And so Republicans came together by the fall. They came together for Trump. He won very strong there. He had a strong showing, I would argue, in 20. I think that'll be the same in 24.
Yeah, looking back to 2016.
A little teeny bit of Trump language there. He won very strong.
It was very strong. It was huge.
Beautiful win.
It was huge.
It was the beautifulest win.
Yeah, it was one of the greatest wins.
So you're pretty. Friends with Trump more than any of us in the room. You
I don't
actually
know if I'm friends, but I have had the opportunity and do have the opportunity sometimes to interact. Yeah.
Okay. So my question is, I've heard that he might be coming here in April. Do you know that if he actually is he going to try to woo voters over?
I've been asked that. It's embarrassing when I have no idea because I do get, but no, I don't know. I don't know if he is or not. But.
May I ask another Trump question? He said this last week that he would debate Joe Biden any place, anywhere, including the authorized debates. Do you think that he'll follow through on that?
I do. Oh, I think President Trump?
Yes, President Trump.
Yeah.
The person who has not agreed to debate.
Well. They were a B team. He didn't want to elevate them terms of viewers. It's kind of like Becky Edwards being the head of the debate commission in Utah but never debating in the last election. It's kind of like that.
I recall you criticized that.
Well, I thought that was there was a bit of irony there, but I do.
How embarrassing is it going to be if we have that debate here and
no one comes?
Yeah, it's in October, before the
RFK
election.
RFK has made the ballot in Utah,
so he'll
and
be there.
No Labels has a slot on Utah's ballot.
So yeah, I will tell you
we've
that
got
I'm
people
not
to talk to.
But Mara, I would say that the chances of those debates happening in my mind are slim, but not because of the Trump not being willing to debate. But I don't know that Biden will be
in the position.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, look, that State of the Union's got me thinking a little differently.
Manipulation has no place at Take Two.
Look, if he can, if the pharmacists and all the people that helped help President Biden do the shout out the union address, he did.
No place.
Maybe that guy shows up. Maybe that guy shows up and they debate. I would love to see a debate.
So Mara,
I think Trump would too.
I hope we do too. I'd like to see it happen. So here's my question, Mara. You mentioned No Labels, and last week they had a meeting of about 500 members to discuss whether they were going to move forward. And it sounded like they're like, we're going to keep deciding what we're deciding. And then yesterday they said they are going to front candidates. They haven't announced who they are. is there enough oxygen and room right now with RFK Jr. in the race for them to find candidates? Are there the right candidates out there?
Yeah, it's interesting. So RFK seems to, if you take his aggregate polling, he's running in about 15% on average, which is a better performance than we've seen in the last two and a half decades. So
Ross Perot was the 20%, right?
And he he's, again, that's his aggregate total. He's been close to 20. He's so far been placed in, I think, 6 states. What's interesting is No Labels has been placed in 24 states. They're holding a ballot position with no candidate, and they're continuing to get on the ballot. So they're in a really good position. If you consider they're in 24 states now, let's say they end up in the 30s, they're in a good position. But it's, so I'm mixed on this because I would like to see America have a third and a fourth party that were viable. I would like to see us moving more to policy discussions than label discussions. I would like to see more than a bilateral choice. Having said that, all of that, I'm going to do what we all do. Tomorrow, we should really correct ourselves. We should do something different because the challenge with today is I don't know how they're anything but a spoiler, but here's what's interesting about both. You know, now we're looking at significant, let's say Kennedy stays at 13 to 15%. Let's say a No Labels candidate comes in at 10 to 12%. Suddenly, you're close to 25, 30%. No one can get to the finish. Now we've got the worst case. We have two candidates nobody wants, and they don't get plurality. And, like, that is a want for America. So suddenly, they are just spoilers. What's interesting to me is when you read early assessments of their polling, now I should say they're the ones that are releasing these snapshots of their polling, they're saying incumbents like Manchin are doing the best for them. That is an interesting thing to me because he's not dynamic. Sure, he's a maverick, let's say, a renegade. He truly has been on undefined territory, right? He's not quite a Democrat. He's not quite a Republican, if I say that in a stereotypical way. But how can you see them as anything but spoilers?
Yeah, and that's the hard thing. And I think some people have thrown out Romney's name, but when he stepped aside from being in the Senate, he said it was because he was too old and he was going to let a younger generation lead. So that doesn't work.
Well, right? Never underestimate his ability to pivot away from anything he said to a whole new line.
You think
of
he
logic.
Can flip and flop?
He does it all the time. Yeah, he's always done that. So that doesn't rule him out, but I don't know that he gets into that. I think he probably sees himself as better than that. I agree with you. I will tell you that the worst part about just having a two-party system, and I haven't really had this opinion for long, but I've come to it over the last few years, is the uniparty mentality, where I have a harder time seeing between the actual policy, Mara, that you're talking about, and it almost starts to feel like a uniparty to me. I do want issues, and I want to battle out on the issues, and I do think so many times there are the same location or the same destination is being pursued. We agree on that. It's how do we get there? But those are great. That I really would like to see parties that delve into that more. The two-party system without any challenges has looked like to me like a uniparty. So I'd like to see that. I think the No Labels is getting stronger, wanting to be there because they're afraid that if RFK is the only other choice, I think that the Biden campaign worries that that cuts into their base more deeply than it does Trump's. And so I would say No Labels would be more inclined to be I think they're just trying to offset their third party. If you have four, maybe then it's just maybe an equal erosion of both bases from both candidates, something like that.
And I'll just add, and I should give credit because Robert Gerke said this morning, so I'm just parroting him. He brought up a really good point, too, that if Americans or Utahns are craving more choice, it's not going to start at the presidential level. We're going to have to insert at a more local level. And I do think, gosh, and I know the United Utah, I don't even remember their name.
United Utah.
Utah Party tried this, but it is changing habits. And it's, you know, you have to get through your fealty test, which I don't think is serving anybody in their parties right now. But I do think he's got a point that if we are serious about this change, it probably has a stronger foothold in reframing our local elections, where you can get some penetration on individual people. You can nuance a little bit more who they are. And I think it might need to trickle up instead of trickling down.
It's an interesting idea. And we saw it in play here with the Senate race when Evan McMullen, again, was trying to run and have Democrats jump out. But it didn't work on his end either. So it'll be interesting to see. And I think it's interesting with polling, too. I don't know how much we can trust polling. But Evan McMullen, when he was running for president, people were thinking that he might actually be able to take the state of Utah. And I think he was very hopeful. I was at his campaign headquarters that night, and I think they were very disappointed in how they finished. And I think a lot of people who wanted to vote something other than Trump probably said they were in the polls. And then when it comes down to it on election day, you're like, but what if, and what if I am a spoiler, and what if I ruin it for this person or that? And then people went back to their known parties where they feel comfortable and safe.
And I think the fear is going to be that if you're voting for no labels, you're essentially lobbying an anti-Trump vote. And so is your calculation that you ensure a Trump victory by not voting for Biden, right? Because if it's between Biden and Trump, but when you know that a no label or a Kennedy vote is likely to maybe result in the guy you absolutely don't want winning, I think that's what happens to all of us. Like, we get to that moment.
I was in a, this isn't different parties, but I was in a race with four candidates for governor, okay? And I can tell you that people don't want to waste their vote. And if they're looking at the candidates and they want to make sure that their vote is going to count one way or another, there might be a candidate that they really, really don't want to win. And it may influence them to vote for the one that they think has the best chance
More likely,
beating that candidate than who they personally thought would be the best candidate. So it changes. And so nobody so if you have this desire that I want my vote to count, and in my case, my campaign, we didn't do a good enough job showing that we were a viable winner. They thought that I was, you know, I was in third, but we were in the margin of error as per the KUTV last poll that
it
was
is
done.
True.
So we were in play, but I think that the perception was is that it was more of a two-person race, and there were some strong feelings about Governor Cox and Governor Huntsman, and so there were some protest votes inside their final numbers, whereas, you know, the 20-something percent I got in the 10 counties I got.
I really like that race because I felt like we had a good slate of candidates.
I would argue I didn't have protest votes inside of my count, but I came in third because of that, right? So, anyway.
But, Greg, who won the most counties in that?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Thanks for asking.
Sure.
And you mentioned Huntsman. I wanted to bring him up just because we're talking about No Labels. He was one of the founders like 13 or 14 years ago of No Labels. And I know the Trib, and I've seen a couple other stories talking about the possibility of maybe he was going to be on a ticket. But I think when he signed on to, was it MasterCard this week, to their board, I thought that's kind of a nail in the coffin. He's moved on and he's done with that. But because I still think he might have another run in him for something. But
yeah, I think that as well, but I don't think it's right now.
No.
I think right now
he's working for MasterCard.
Selling credit cards.
Yeah.
He's still with Ford, though. I think he's with Ford Motor
I was wondering
too.
If he left them as well. I didn't even look that up, or if he's doing both. Anyhow, he's a smart man. Good work.
He is.
I want to get back to the November ballot issue here in the great state of Utah. The Utah Education Association came out yesterday, the board of directors, saying that they have voted unanimously to oppose a proposed Utah constitutional amendment that voters will get a choice on in November. It's known as SJR 10, and this would make it so that the income tax, which now is constitutionally protected to go strictly to education, could go to other things as well. Greg, is this a good idea, this constitutional amendment? Do we need to spend the money in different directions, or do we need to protect education and make sure it's funded solely through our income tax?
So I'm not in the legislature anymore, but from my observation, I thought I think that there are some disappointed lawmakers about this position of opposition, because I think that to prove to public education that the legislature, the state of Utah, was committed to public education, they've enjoyed large budget increases, high weighted pupil unit percentage increases over years. And I think in this constitutional amendment is some guarantees on funding that they thought was going to bring the confidence of the education community. Why this budget, if you're a taxpayer and you're sending money to the state of Utah, why it is getting more difficult to earmark that for a particular endeavor like public ed, which is, when I got in the legislature way, way back when, that was easily the highest line item in our state budget. Yeah. Health and Human Services is now the highest line item in that budget. And so you have to look at your constituency. Yeah, look at the state. It's taxpayers. What are we paying for? How do we pay for it? And I do think it's more responsible budgeting to have the taxpayer dollars that arrive and prioritizing them generally. But make sure that public education doesn't feel like they're going to be robbed for it, which I thought they put some appropriate parameters around that. So I think it's a good, I'm going to support that constitutional amendment because I think that the people that we elect to be lawmakers and to put that budget together need Utah's taxpayer money to put the budget together and prioritize it appropriately.
So I would agree with UTA in opposing it, but I think it is on much of the rationale that Greg said. I'm not inherently against getting rid of this. That's where I've been struggling. We see the balance, the imbalance in the budget. If you understand the restricted funds, it's a real problem, not a made up problem. All of the challenges that the legislature is pointing out, I think, exist and are real. And I think that that's why UEA and others have deliberated. The reason I think I'm opposed to it right now, and I am not a part of the Utah Education Association, but they may have had the same deliberation. To Greg's point, from my assessment, the language in this bill and the actions of the legislature have not given me enough trust yet to take off this earmark. I need to see more long-term planning. We made a lot of hoopla this year about generational planning, and I'm not confident. I don't have a degree of trust and confidence yet that the legislature will spend taxpayer money for education the way I want to. So interestingly enough, my objection is not to the fundamental action of taking it off. I just have to acknowledge I don't have enough trust yet in our legislature to see that happening. And what'll be interesting then, just speaking about what the UEA did, Utah Education Association is an interesting association in my mind. They can be really influential, and then oftentimes they've hurt their own interests. They have mixed strategy. So I'm looking, and one of the things I looked at when I saw that this week is that I'm like, oh, okay, it's March. So normally you'd assess that they're coming out this early because they're going to start shaping a campaign.
Yes.
Otherwise, you know, you would wait and be a surprise. This isn't a surprise at all. They announced their opposition before anyone even knows they're voting on it, right? So It's not real-time decision-making. So one would suppose they're putting together a campaign.
I am. Are they not?
Right. I mean, that would be the March thing, yes. Right, that you and I are both reading. So it'll be really interesting if UEA takes a minute to come from a researched constituent point of view. I think that their opposition might be really powerful. If UEA comes from an inside baseball lobbying, I'm mad at the legislature, which they sometimes come from, I don't think that will be a very effective campaign.
It won't. And I have a little more faith, maybe because I've seen, I know there was a goal to see teacher salaries get a lot higher than they've been. And I think that has happened. I think we've seen teacher salaries appropriately increase. Yeah. And so I think there's a track record there where there could be trust. I'll tell you this, absent this new vote where they oppose this constitutional amendment, I have found the working relationship between the Utah Education Association and our legislature
greatly
to be healthier than I've ever seen it before. Certainly when I was there, it was way more hostile.
And I do
I was
think
there.
They thoughtfully considered it. I don't think they out of hand. I think this was a hard call for them to make. Mm-hmm. And I hope they keep, I hope this is a hope for the legislature. Sometimes super majorities can be very intolerant of other people's opinions. And I hope that they don't see this opposition as, well, then you're dead to us. I hope they keep working on things, you know, because the citizens actually may vote in their favor. Either way, I feel like the Utah Education Association and the legislature, I think everybody is benefited when the two of them get along a little better.
I do agree. Think there's going to be a major education push that needs to happen, though, because sometimes we have these amendments that go in the Constitution, and somebody hasn't sold us
no
well
one
on
owns
it. Yeah.
It. Yeah.
So somebody's going to have to own it, explain it to voters, and help them understand the for and against, because sometimes just the little sentence you get in a voter guide isn't enough for voters to truly understand what's at stake, what will make the difference, that kind of thing. Yeah. So hopefully we'll be having more of a conversation.
Well, I think we see the UEA likely stepping into the role of actively owning the don't vote for it side.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll pay attention to that. Also, one that I think I've been trying to read up to and understand the sides on this is the TikTok bill that passed through the House. It's headed to the Senate, although the Senate has not yet agreed to take this up for a vote yet, is the TikTok ban, which technically is not a ban. If China would agree to sell off the app to someone here in the U.S., then the app could keep running. All of our House members voted in favor of this bill. I spoke to Senator Romney earlier this week. He said he was in favor. Senator Mike Lee has some concerns, as I've seen from some other people, that maybe there could be a couple sentences in there that were essentially a Trojan horse of sorts inside of the bill that would allow it for the government to have control over some apps or websites that may be a problem down the road where they start filtering and deciding what is free speech and what they can censor. So I'm interested to hear where you guys stand on this and if there are concerns, if we need to slow roll this, or if it's time to shut down China's window into our world and say, get out. Who wants to go first?
I'll take a crack at it. So it's not as voluminous as other congressional bills are, where we want to do one simple thing and it takes you 800 pages to do it. It's not that bad. It's a 12-page bill. I really would love it to just say, you know, you got to divest. There was even an argument whether TikTok could even come into the United States back during the Trump administration. And the talk back then was you need to be, it can't be owned by China. It needs to have an American, has to have a domestic owner to come in. But when he lost that race, TikTok's here. It's got quite the following now. The way the bill's written, it does say these countries, there's a term. It's not adversarial country, but there's some term that really, I'm told, it's Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, something like that. It's not a bunch of countries, but there's a term that's used that says these countries cannot own it or be the, you know, be in control of that site. If this is a way to get China to not be able to use our cameras and our microphones and our phones, the cameras, all of that, and the messages they push out to push sentiment and attitudes, I don't want China to have that kind of control, and I certainly support the legislative intent of making it so that China can't own TikTok and down, you know, just data mine and do all they're going to do. That what's confusing me about this bill, even in real time, is the skepticism that I'm getting from conservatives. So you have AOC, and then you have conservative Thomas Massey from the House, a conservative and a liberal. They're both against the bill. And so you're asking yourself why. Well, one of the provisions is that the president of the United States gets to determine the two factors. Is it a foreign adversary? Is it controlled by a foreign adversary? And does it present a clear and present danger? Well, a lot of people are saying giving the president that broad of decision making about those two factors is too broad and could create censorship of other companies. And so examples of that I've seen is that J.D. Vance, this was someone complaining about Senator J.D. Vance owns a stock in Rumble. It's like YouTube. And it says J.D. Vance profits off of a company spreading Putin's propaganda. Is it any wonder that he doesn't really care what happens to Ukraine? And people have said, well, that could be considered a foreign adversary controlled. Another one was that Elon Musk and what he says is Russian propaganda. And that could be determined to be Twitter or X could be foreign adversary controlled. And so there's this worry when Senator Lee talks about a Trojan horse. Do you have enough safeguards, a definition strong enough that a foreign adversary controlled platform, is it really from China like TikTok, or will it be some of the right of center platforms that are out there, or right of center sentiment that's out there that would be accused of being foreign adversary controlled? And so that's the best I can do in terms of gleaning the hesitation about that bill.
And if I understand Senator Lee went to when he's spoken about it, it seems to me, I'm waiting to interview him hopefully soon, but it sounds to me like there's concerns that even if it were sold off to, let's say, a U.S. company or other people here, what's to say they have our best interests at heart, too, and they're not going to be sending all of that information to our own government or someone else? Because, I mean, when you look back to even the pandemic, most of the social media companies, the big companies, were to a large extent, cooperating with the government and banning people that they said are naughty and shouldn't be talking or whatnot. And so it may not just be China. China is obviously a problem to know everything that goes on. So, Mara, what do you think? Should we ban it? What's going to happen?
So I think one thing that was interesting is the overwhelming bipartisanship is confusing until you realize it took only 5 days to pass this. And during those 5 days, there was almost assurance from the Senate that they're not taking it up. So what did it become? Oh, I'm going to go into my election cycle saying that I...
Which could be,
And it worked for both parties. It works for everybody because nobody wants the Chinese government to be tracking us.
Correct.
It's a universally held position. So this was easy pickings. You've got the Senate really telling you, don't worry about it. And the House is like, okay, me, with no consequence, did they do this? But to your point, what are they trying to solve has gotten murkier and murkier. I mean, like, we're not trying to solve technology that tracks us, which is what I'm worried about.
Correct.
Whether that
we're just
is
let an
Meta,
American owner track
I don't,
us.
I don't care if Meta's doing
I'm
it.
With
I don't
you
care
on
if
this,
TikTok's doing it. I don't care who's doing it. I want that choice. And you cannot tell me that there's not a technological solution for TikTok. Like, you have to solve the real problem. We're throwing around the Red China scare as this shield. And the other part I'll just point out, you know who owns Motorola? Let's first start. Who's Motorola's biggest buyer? Law enforcement.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Who owns Motorola?
I just want to say America. Just tell me
a Chinese company. Now, listen, I don't know anything about them. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying they're selling our data. I'm just saying sometimes they get issues. Here's what we all agree on. We don't want to be tracked unknowingly. Here's what we double agree on. We don't want that tracker to be China. But I don't want any of it. And until we get serious, this bleeds into the social media conversation with kids and permissions. We have to get serious about wrapping our arms around the fact that 95% of us have access to devices that provide these apps and media. And we don't feel protected. And I'm as annoyed with the consumerism of Meta and the disregard for mental health that they prescribe. And interestingly enough, we have put several safeguards under ByteDance. Now, I run the risk of sounding like I'm pro-Chinese company, and I'm not.
I know. We all do when we talk about it.
But I look and say, listen, they spent over $1 billion setting up a secured location in Texas. They have 3 of their 5 board of directors are Americans. I mean, they're going through, and maybe it's all fake. Maybe it's all machinations. But I'll tell you what, Mark Zuckerberg isn't giving it that kind of effort.
No.
So I think what we have is a technology problem, and what the House just did, and good for them because it's both sides, what the House just did is saw political talking points and wins going into their reelection.
You know, it's actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I watched this exchange between Senator Marco Rubio and FBI Director Christopher Wray. And he was asking about the threat of the TikTok and its ability to push narratives or push sentiment and also track data and get information. And Christopher Wray was saying that this is a clear and present danger. And he was talking about even elections and what information can get out there. And he was saying that it's very, very difficult to detect or track, and it's very dangerous. And I'm listening to him say that, and I'm going to your point. And that's just TikTok you're talking about, or is that just social media algorithms, whatever you're doing? I think that that's a broader discussion, not just with TikTok, but if he's admitting that there's this incredible power of which they are worried about that the owner of TikTok has, what's to say you want that type of influence or access to our privacy or whatever with any of them? I mean, it's the same issue. So to hear Christopher Wray express so much concern on this social media platform without there being anything described about the others, I just found it to be selective.
Who do we want to manipulate
us? We're not talking about the issue.
Right. That's exactly right. We're not talking about the actual issue that's in front of us.
We're not talking about even homegrown propaganda. I think we intuitively think that there's no propaganda generated in America. There is, yes. And there are bad actors everywhere. So mm-hmm. how do we teach us and our kids to recognize it? Yeah. How do we keep ourselves safeguarded from that? And then I'm going to expand this as a little bit of a non sequitur, but you look at the law that was just passed or in the process appears of being passed by the EU on artificial intelligence. So they're well ahead of us. This is, I can't remember how many nations are in the EU, but it's in the 20s. Yeah. I think it's 28. And they took 5 years. They built base level policies to protect themselves against AI. Well, we need protections against AI. America's not acting on it. We need guardrails and things to protect us about what it is we like and dislike about technology. And I would rather spend that energy on the substantive issues, bringing in experts who can actually bind base level legislation that does not impact the free market, like just basic guardrails. And yet I feel like the China thing, albeit very real, it feels a little bit like we're using this as a red herring to win political points again.
Yeah.
I'm bothered by it.
I think there's something to that. I do. I know a station that you probably have, you're probably one of those, subscribers. It's a Blaze TV Plus subscribers. There was a new documentary that just came out about the border and that town in Texas where they had the big press conference and everything. And
Eagle Creek.
Yeah. So I spoke with someone who was that just premiered yesterday. But the most, what really caught me off guard is that the person that put that documentary together said it is political pageantry on both sides on that border and in that location.
Absolutely.
That he could walk just a little further away and walk right across that border and walk right back up, and there was no interruption whatsoever. And he said on both sides,
right,
for the issues right. you've just said, for political theater and election year, that is getting a lot of attention on both sides of the aisle. And I was disappointed to hear that. I was actually shocked. I actually thought that Governor Abbott was trying to deal with public safety. And he came back and said, I'm sorry, if they were worried about public safety, it wouldn't be that easy once you got out of camera shot to walk back and forth. And you can. So his takeaway was there's a lot of political pageantry going on without a lot of substance on that border issue. So it's, I would say the same exhausting. With the TikTok. I think that would follow the same suit.
So it sounds like they're not going to solve this one. And in the meantime, the algorithm, which we discussed, might be more dangerous than what we're even seeing from what's getting fed to China, because they decide what we can see and how much of it and what you're going to see. So many problems to solve. And the Utah legislature, when we're talking about AI, kind of skipped over that too. I think they had an opportunity to start looking at it. But when you pass
they
almost
did a couple of base level bills. I think they did two bills. But I mean, I think we have to wrap our arms. And I do think we have what we need to do it. But again, you know, I mean, here's my theme for the year. I feel like what used to be woven into the American psyche was sort of self-reliance and self-responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I think this was regardless, like this was on both sides of the spectrum. I felt like Americans were very Emancipation Proclamation, like very like, let's work collectively, but you ultimately have to take responsibility for yourself.
Yeah.
I feel like if I had to just choose one thing that's missing right now from all of our civic dialogue, it is where is the personal responsibility in what we're talking about? And it's interesting because it's equally on all sides, but at what point, you know, we want solves for everything. We want the government to solve our parenting problems. It's everything is someone else's problem or fault. And until I think we can come back to a space that starts with what responsibility do I have? And then what help do I need from my community?
But you know what, Mara,
government?
The only thing I would add to that is that corporate responsibility ought to be restored. So they got some pretty strong legal protections on under the banner of freedom of speech,
right,
where these social media platforms were not subject to libel laws, slander laws, nothing. They
right.
Because they were merely a platform, and it was inconceivable that they could actually censor the bad stuff. So this is like, geez, these are just open conversations happening, and you can't, it'd be like suing Ford for having a car that they used to rob a bank. They're just the vehicle. They're not the ones doing it. Well, fast forward to 2024, I believe absolutely they can censor, or they can shape, or they can preclude certain discussions from happening, but they enjoy legal protections that you don't have in Canada, you don't have in Great Britain, you don't have in France, you don't have anywhere. These legal protections are here. Those corporations, I believe, mm-hmm. should have legal liability for what's on their platforms, just like they would in any other country if they were to domicile there. And that responsibility, combined with the parental and individual responsibility, I think is the best or the clearest path to get to something sane versus what we have now.
Yeah, and I mean, interestingly enough, for social media, I don't think for whatever reason, when it first came out, we did all just not think very much about it and thought, oh, it's a community space, right, where we're just sharing.
Yeah.
And it didn't occur to us that we were actually shopping at your store with your rules. I mean, that there was nothing sort of open about it. It was a private company
and nobody,
that we were giving all this.
Yeah, and no one could even comprehend that you could, there, if it was so widely used, how could you actually control or how could you manage? And so it didn't even seem reasonable that they would be responsible for that. But it is now. I think now we can say the technology is where it needs to be because it is being exercised. There just needs to be laws that hold people accountable for what's on those platforms. Because I think they're, you can call it platform, publisher, whatever you want to use by way of term, there should be some responsibility of the platforms themselves.
Well, I don't think we're going to see any meaningful legislation passed from Congress between now and the election. I think everyone's going to be messing around because it's an election year, guys.
Yeah, but it is also, sorry, go ahead.
Well, funny story. So when I was a lawmaker, we went back to D.C. and we were meeting with Senator Hatch's staffer on an issue that we had had success as a state, and they were curious to maybe roll this out as federal law as well. And the staffer was a young staffer, and he was the head of, I think, banking, whatever. It's one of their big committees. And the staffer, she was young, and she said, it's an election year. She said, just like this, it's an election year. We really don't do anything in election years. And I looked around. We had people from Utah that flew out there with me. And I'm like, there are editorial cartoons about that. That's like said in cartoons, not by actual staffers being serious. I said this because I could not believe. I was so embarrassed for the group that we had brought to have this meeting that she said it so blatantly. It's an election year, and we don't really do things in election years. So there you go.
I would like to have a whole year every 4 years where you just get a mail it
in. Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that I believe strongly, very strongly, that one of the most overlooked holidays in America is St. Patrick's Day. St. Patrick's Day is in my top three easily.
Ooh, you love it? Why?
I love it. One, I'm mostly Irish. I'm giving a shout out here to Greg as well. And two, there's no obligations, right? So everything is you celebrating. Good job. He's got his four leaf clover.
He's got his lucky in his pocket. Cute.
And there's just there's so much for all ages. You know, if you want a drink, it's a drinking holiday. If you want to have cute little snacks and fun things, it's a cute little snack and fun things. There's a color associated with it that looks good on just about everybody. There's parades, there's gathering, there's music, and there's no obligation. So I'm just saying, if you are one of the many who choose not to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, you can call your own shots. Like, you can make it anything you want, but to make a special day to do something that you want to do. I mean, remember how indulgent the Irish can be? So, like, you can do just about anything you want.
It's a ripoff. It's on Sunday this year.
St. Patrick. Well, see, not for me, but I hear you.
You know, if you're going to do a pub crawl, if you're going to be wearing your green in front of everyone, you'd like it to be in a day where everyone sees you.
I think people use it as a full, like, long weekend. So, I mean, fun will be had.
There's parades.
Yeah.
There's music. Yeah. I think if you have not considered celebrating St. Patrick's
Day. I am Irish.
You should think about it.
You should think about it.
Quite appreciate St. Patrick's Day.
I might make green mashed potatoes at my house.
Yeah, our family had a 21 and over party.
Ooh.
So part of going to the adult St. Patrick's Day party is, one, you then figured out that they were grown-ups too, which was way too much information. But it was like this rite of passage.
Do you still do it?
Well, the cousin who did that, it's okay. Too long.
TMI.
Yes, TMI. Yes, we still have a St. Patrick's Day party.
Tap out.
We still do.
Okay.
You know you're saying this out loud.
I won't be there. Okay. I'm not apologetic.
Okay. All right. If you're celebrating.
I'm celebrating.
Okay. With more than Lucky Charms, drive safely. Get yourself an Uber. But have a lovely weekend. And we're going to take a little break. I am not Irish. I'm Dutch. And I'm going to the Netherlands for a couple of weeks. So we might have a little break in the podcast. And then we'll be back, hopefully, with a ton of really good, juicy stuff to talk about. So thanks for joining us. And celebrate this weekend. Have fun. And send us a message about it. We'd love to hear about it.